Federal authorities are conducting a review of the sexual assault and harassment policies of the Wisconsin National Guard units in response to misconduct allegations that surfaced in January. We're talking about the situation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And please be aware that during this conversation, we will be talking about sexual assault and prevention. And this frank discussion may not be suitable for all listeners who are with us at this moment. Your voice is welcome, though, through this discussion at 800-642-1234. Are you a victim of military sexual trauma, or have you worked with a victim of military sexual trauma? What did you or they need in terms of support? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Robert Bragna is a sexual assault response coordinator for the Wisconsin National Guard. Robert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
And Amber Garfoot is a victim advocate for the Wisconsin National Guard. Amber, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's look at this report. The Associated Press reported that the National Guard received 52 reports of sexual assault between 2013 and 2017. Robert, what is known about these reports?
Well, what's interesting is that this is the first time that we're talking about these numbers. And so what I find interesting, to be quite honest, is how few conclusions you can draw from them. And let me explain. I try to avoid talking about numbers because a lot of the assaults that we have reported to us are incidences that happened prior to the service members' entry into the military. They could have happened as a child. And so only a portion of any reports that we see are related to their military status and duty performance. So the thing is that if we have 52, it could be indication of assaults that occurred, you know, in the past. And there's really no, it's such a varied experience that everybody has. You know, there's active duty experience, National Guard, Reserve, incidences that happen in the United States, and incidences that happen on deployment. And so there's really very little to compare to cases, and there's no conclusion really that I can think that you can draw from numbers.
Amber, how have you seen the way the military responds and records assaults? How has that changed over time?
Well, I've been with this program for about 7 years now, and when I first came in, it was when there was a lot going on in Congress, and the military was testifying in front of Congress about sexual assaults in the military. And from that point on, there's been change after change after change, and positive change. It's just hard to have those positive changes make the news, right? Because unfortunately, it's always the things that maybe are less favorable that end up in the media. But the changes that I've seen over time have been the addition of full-time staff, more dedicated staff, the addition of legal assistance specifically for victims of sexual assault. There's been policy changes and a lot more resources for us to access for service members to receive care that they need after that they've been a victim of sexual assault.
So you see these positive changes. You also see a growing amount of support around these victims who do come forward. It sounds like there are actually more jobs out there like yours, a victim advocate.
Correct. And some of our victim advocates are what we call a dual status. Or they do this as an additional duty to their military service. So they may be a truck driver or a logistics officer or whatever the case may be, and they perform duties as a victim advocate in addition to what they already do. And most of those people who do that they seek that position because they're very passionate about the topic. So we always know that our service members who come forward are in excellent hands because there are a lot of really great passionate people that are in our program.
Robert, the Wisconsin National Guard's procedures are under federal review at the moment. Given the work you do to improve victims' lives, what's the value of this look at the policies and procedures of your work?
Well, so the Wisconsin National Guard is subject as it would be that we have soldiers and airmen from the Army and Air Force. We're subject to the policies that those departments have. We're also subject to the policies of the National Guard Bureau. And so 95% of our policies, procedures, and the way we operate is in accordance with that. There's very little unique to Wisconsin that you wouldn't see in another state's National Guard. What I think is the value of looking at this, especially in this public forum, is that it hopefully will give the public and our service members more confidence in the fact that we, above all else, try to apply a process and make sure that the process is effective. Of course, every process might have a different outcome, and we can't control outcomes, but we can control the process, and that's what we're interested in focusing on.
As you look at this process, what does this process entail as victims come forward? What happens?
Well, people come forward for different reasons. And so some people come forward simply because they want access to some resources. Could be mental health services, could be medical, legal, law enforcement. And especially in cases where their personal experience is little to do with their military experience, it doesn't necessarily become an issue that a chain of command would get involved in. And so oftentimes those folks will file what we call restricted reports, which is unique to the military in the sense that you can come forward, make a report, and a victim advocate, the sexual assault response coordinator, and the victim are really the only ones that know that the report was made. And that's so that in a confidential manner, we can assist the victim and get them access to resources. So people come forward for that. What gets talked about more often is what we call unrestricted reporting, which is where a chain of command does become aware that a service member alleges they were sexually assaulted. If, again, it has nothing to do with military service, it's more or less a awareness that the chain of command have so they can be supportive. If it has something specific to do with their military service, and I'll try to avoid using legal terms because I'm not an attorney. Generally speaking, if it is a sexual assault in general, it's a crime. And the organization acknowledges that. So if the chain of command becomes aware of an allegation, the issue gets referred to law enforcement. In the state of Wisconsin, we don't have any active duty criminal investigative agencies here like CID for the Army or OSI for the Air Force. And so local law enforcement is the agency that has jurisdiction. In the event that an investigation is not pursued or charges are not brought on someone alleged to have committed the crime, and that's for various reasons, it could be a district attorney decides not to prosecute because they think they can't win. It could be that the agency might not have enough resources available to consider it their priority. And so in that case, the Wisconsin National Guard can do an administrative investigation to, at the very least, hold the person administratively accountable, given that there would be no criminal charge brought. Does that make sense?
And this takes time.
Yes.
This whole process takes time.
And, you know, as much as some leaders might want to move swiftly, because we definitely talk about how this is our priority issue, the fact is that the process can be re-victimizing to people, and we take great care to make sure that we're putting the victim in the driver's seat as much as we can. In some cases, swift action is not necessarily what the victim's looking for, and so we try to control the pace based on the best interest of the victim.
The Air Force is investigating allegations of sexual assault and harassment within a Wisconsin Air National Guard security unit that is dating back to 2002. And the investigation came at the request of U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. We're talking about Wisconsin National Guard prevention efforts and what's being done to change the climate in the military when it comes to sexual assault, sexual trauma. Robert Branya and Amber Garfoot are our guides. They're with the Wisconsin National Guard. Guard members, past and present, how are you feeling about this federal review? What do you think this means for the Guard and the work it does? Let us know. Join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back to this conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about sexual assault prevention efforts in the military. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And if you're just joining us now, please be aware that this is a sensitive subject that might not be appropriate for everyone to hear this half hour. We learned last month that the Wisconsin National Guard has received more than 4 dozen reports of sexual assault between 2013 and 2017, with more than half related to military service. We're talking about this with the National Guard about where to go from here as the Air Force reviews the Wisconsin Guard's sexual assault and harassment reporting procedures, the investigative process, the accountability measures. Getting your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. What changes do you want to see when it comes to how our institutions, like the military, respond to sexual assault? What can be made better? What is already an improvement that is going well? You can join in by phone at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Robert Bronya and Amber Garfoot are our guides. They are with the Wisconsin National Guard. And Amber, going back to you as a victim advocate, if the person who is reporting the assault requests for this to stay confidential, what does that mean?
Confidentiality means for a victim coming forward, if in our organization isn't a restricted report. So in that event, if I were to take in a restricted report, I would only be able to talk to Rob about it because he's our sexual assault response coordinator. But that means that our chain of command would have no awareness, the rest of our organization would have no awareness of the report of sexual assault. It's really a matter of keeping that victim in the driver's seat for whatever resources that they would like to get from our program.
So is it possible for the report to be confidential but still be reported to law enforcement?
In our organization, no, it is not. So if we take in a restricted report, there's no law enforcement that is contacted. There is no process that moves forward to seek punishment for that individual accused of the sexual assault, and that is at the request of that particular victim.
Amber, what kind of environment is necessary for victims to come forward, to feel supported, to feel like they can talk?
We talk about this a lot, actually, in our organization, and it's something that we really hone in on. Just this last month during Sexual Assault Awareness Month, it was a big topic of conversation. And I believe personally that individuals need to understand that they're not alone, and that there's lots of survivors of sexual assault, unfortunately, but that they are safe to share their story and connect with others and to find the resources that they need specific to whatever it is that they're, you know, having challenges with from that are a result of their assault. But it really, environmentally, they need to understand that they have a place to go that's safe, and they need to be able to feel safe talking about their assault.
Robert, you know, the military is a difficult place in many ways. There are deployments, there are physical demands, there are mental demands. What does sexual assault prevention entail in that kind of environment?
Well, sexual assault, the dynamics involved are pretty complex in general, in any environment. And so when you add those extra complexities, some of them affect the dynamics and some don't. What I think is our approach as bystander intervention is that people need to be aware of certain behaviors, certain red flags, and that at the end of the day, if something happens that we don't know about, there's not very little we can do. But we don't want to cross into the lane of suggesting prevention, such as being with someone else so that something doesn't happen to you. You know, saying don't be sexually assaulted, so don't go out at night or don't be alone, is really putting the onus on people who are potential victims to prevent the assault from occurring. And that's the kind of training and messaging we try to avoid. So bystander intervention is important, and also helping people understand the issue of consent in general. You know, it really goes back to, we are the only organization in some cases in folks' lives that are talking about this. If we have a large number of our service members who are college students, I can't speak for what goes on at different universities, but if they have 4 years of a college experience and maybe are talked to once about the issue of consent or sexual assault, it doesn't become a part of their college experience. Whereas in our organization, you know, several times a year, they see this issue emphasized and they're provided with contact information, and it's, you know, it's constant education. So we have people that come to our organization because we're talking about it, and that is, I guess, our biggest ally in fighting this.
Yeah, when you say constant education, what is going on proactively on bases to get some of this education about what is okay and not okay in assault prevention?
Well, and I'll give you some specific examples of what we've done, but I want to emphasize education is an uphill battle because it is the case that we have people constantly coming into our organization and constantly leaving. People that do their 4 years, their 6 years, their 8 years, they come and go. People that retire. And any given year, you can go to a unit you were just at and see new faces. And so it's a matter of constantly talking about this. So in addition to constantly talking about it, and we do try to not, you know, bar ourselves in our offices, we try to get out there and get the word out and have people understand that we are people and we're approachable. But we also do certain bigger events to draw more attention. There's a nationally known speaker, Mike Domish, who's come and talked with our organization. We had Elizabeth Smart come here this past April for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so we kind of try to get professional focus on this issue and have trainings that our advocates can take, and it's kind of a train the trainer. So when our advocates are at units, they can talk about it as well.
Robert Branya, I'm wondering, is the news coverage and the calls for investigation by Governor Evers and U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, is that having an effect on the work you're doing or on the people in this branch of the military?
Well, from my experience, and experience is all I can speak to, I feel like the barriers that people face in reporting a sexual assault come down to trust a lot of times. And so helping people understand that this program is victim-centered and that advocates are people who are selected because they're a good fit and that they're empathetic and that we want to help is important. When attention gets paid to this issue and the real story isn't told, you know, the real story of what we have in the state and what's going on, I feel like that runs the risk of just creating more barriers, creating more questions than answers. And, you know, that's my biggest concern.
Amber, one facet of the National Guard is that it is not full time. And Robert just talked a little bit about that flux. Does that have an effect on the level of community support that's available to a member of the Guard if they do report an assault?
No, it does not affect the level of support that they receive. Our victim advocates are able to come on what we call an order at any time to serve that individual. And that's also why we have full-time staff. And we recognize that we have those barriers and we have those challenges at times, but we have good resources put into place to work around those. We also rely heavily upon our community resources. So our service members are part of our community, and in some ways that is a challenge. So when we get people into our organization, they've already had, you know, 17 plus years worth of life experience, and they come from a vast, vast variety of backgrounds. And so their family life may look very different from what someone else's family life experience was. And that very much so affects our culture. And so we're constantly having to work around that. But because they're community members and they have such a variety of backgrounds, we have to rely on a very vast variety of resources to accommodate whatever it is that they really need to be feeling more whole, you know.
As we start to wrap up, I still want to get this question into both of you. Amber, first, you know, what is the most difficult thing about being a victim advocate? What do you grapple with?
For me, the most difficult thing is in some cases where you really feel like maybe something more can be done and you're stuck, you know, and you're feeling like, well, this person doesn't, they don't want their case to go to the court system, but they have a good case to go to the court system. And it's respecting that individual and listening to what they have to say, because at the end of the day, it's not my story to tell. And I'm there for them, and I'm wanting to support them in any way possible. So it's being a really good listener and just really trying to figure out what it is that that individual needs to be successful in a healing process. And whatever that may look like to them may not look like the same healing process to me. So to be an advocate, you really have to be a phenomenal listener, and you have to figure out what it is that someone wants and ask really, really good questions to get to that point.
Robert Branya, what about you?
Well, I think it should be said, and anybody who works in the career field of victim advocacy will agree, it's challenging to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, because this career field tends to draw people who are extremely empathetic, and you'll there's a term, vicarious trauma, that they'll be familiar with. You don't want to make yourself ineffective by investing yourself so much emotionally in your job that it burns you out. As somebody who's been doing this for 11 years, I can tell you that what I find most challenging is keeping myself healthy for the people that I serve.
Robert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Robert Bragna is a sexual assault response coordinator of the Wisconsin National Guard. Amber, thank you.
Thank you.
Amber Garfoot is a victim advocate for the Wisconsin National Guard, and you hear this conversation on the Ideas Network.